Uncle Snake bit Bob's Sunday school. There was no more faithful slave in all the Southland than old Uncle Snake bit Bob. He had been bitten by a rattlesnake when he was a boy, and the limb had to be amputated, and his place was supplied with a wooden peg. There were three or four other Bobs on the plantation, and he was called Snakebit to distinguish him. Though lame and sick a good deal of his time, his life had not been wasted, nor had he been a useless slave to his master. He made all of the baskets that were used in the cotton picking season, and had learned to mend shoes. Besides that, he was a great horse doctor of the neighborhood, and not only cured his master's horses and mules, but was sent for miles around to see the sick stop. And then, too, he could rebottom chairs and make buckets and tubs and brooms, and all the money he made was his own. So the old man had quite a little store of gold and silver sewed up in an old bag and buried somewhere. Nobody knew where except himself. Uncle Snakebit Bob had never married and had no family ties, and furthermore, he was old Granny Rachel's only child, and Granny had died long, long ago, ever since the children's mother was a baby. And he had no brothers or sisters, so, having no cause to spend his money, he had laid it up until now he was a miser, and would steal out by himself at night and count his gold and silver and chuckle over it with great delight. But he was a very good old man, and Mammy used to say he was the parsest man that was on this place, and he had for years led into prayer meetings and called up the moaners. One evening, as he sat on a hog pen talking to Uncle Daniel, who was a preacher, they began to speak of the wickedness among the young niggers on the plantation. "Pure as to me," said Uncle Bob, "as if them niggers done forgot they got to die. They're just a dancing and cavorting every night, and they get left mun whenever that angel blow his horn. I'll tell you what I've been a-studying, Berdano. I've been a-studying that what's the matter with these niggers is that the children ain't riz right. You know, the book hit says, if you raise the children like you want them to go, then the old ones, they won't part from it. And, sir, if the Lord spars me till next Sunday, I'll allow to ask Master to let me teach a Sunday school in the gin house for the children." Major Waldron heartily consented to Uncle Bob's proposition, and had the gin house all swept out for him, and had the carpenter to make him some rough benches. And when next Sunday evening came around, all the little darkies, with their heads combed and their Sunday clothes on, assembled for the Sunday school. The white children begged so hard to go too that finally Mammy consented to take them. So when Uncle Snakebit Bob walked into the gin house, their eager little faces were among those of his pupils. "Now you all sit down," said Uncle Bob, "and behave yourself till I fix you in a line." Having arranged them to his satisfaction, he delivered to them a short address setting forth the object of the meeting and his intentions concerning them. "Children," he began, "I brought you here this evening for to raise you like you ought to be rears. The folks these days is a-gwine to destruction of dancing and a-picking of banjos and a-singing of real tunes and a-cutting up every kind of devilment. I've been a-watching them, and mind you, when the horn hits sound for the jest to rise, half the niggers gwine be with their own jest, and I allowed myself that I was a-gwine to try to save the children. I gwine pray for you, I gwine instruct you, and I gwine do the best to land you in heaven. Now you just pay attention to the instruction I gwine give you. That's all I ask of you, and me and the Lord gwine do the rest." After this exhortation, the old man began at the top of the line and asked Gus, a bright-eyed little nigger, "Who made you?" "I don't know, sir," answered Gus very untruthfully, for Aunt Nancy had told him repeatedly. "God made you," said Uncle Bob. "Now, who made you?" "God," answered Gus. "That's right," said the old man. Then proceeded to Jim, the next in order. "What did he make out?" demanded the teacher. "I don't know, sir," answered Jim, with as little regard for the truth as Gus had shown. "He made you out in dirt," said Uncle Bob. "Now, what did he make out in?" "Dirt," answered Jim promptly. And the old man passed on to the next. "What did he make you for?" Again, the answer was, "I don't know, sir." And the old man, after scratching his head and reflecting a moment, said, "For to do the best you can," which the child repeated after him. "Who was the first man?" was the next question, and the little nigger professing ignorance, as usual, the old man replied, "Marse Adam." And so he went on down the line explaining Moss Cain killed his brother, that Moss Abel was the first man killed, that Moss Noah built the ark, that Moss Thuzlam was the oldest man, and so on, until he reached the end of the line and had almost exhausted his store of information. The only thing to see how much the children remembered, he began at the top of the line once more and asked the child, "Who made you?" "Dirt," answered the little Negro. "Who?" demanded Uncle Bob in astonishment. "Dirt," answered, replied the child. "Didn't I tell you God made you?" Asked the old man. "No, sir," replied the boy. "Done what God made, done slip out the door." And so it was. As soon as Uncle Bob's back was turned, Gus, who had weird of the Sunday school, slipped out, and the old man not noticed the change. The confusion resulting from this trifling circumstance was fearful. Dirt made the first child. The question, "What did he make you for?" was promptly answered, "Marse Adam." Eve was the first man. Marse Cain was the first woman. Marse Abel killed his brother. Marse Noah was the first one slewed. Marse Thuzlam built the ark, and so on, until the old man had to begin all over again and give each one a new answer. The catechizing through, Uncle Bob said, "Now, children, I'm going to explain the scriptures to you. I'm going to tell you about Dan'l in the lion's den. Dan'l was a good Christian man what lived in the Bible. And whether he was a white man or whether he was a black man, I don't know. I ain't never heard nobody say. But that's neither here nor there. He was a good man. And he prayed 3 times a day. At the first peepit of the day, Bert Dan'l, he used him for to hop out in his bed and get down on his knees. And as soon as ever the horn had blowed for the hands to come in for out in the field for dinner, Bert Dan'l, he went to it in his house, he did, and he flopped right back on his knees. And when the sun set, then there he was again, a praying and a striving with the Lord. Well, the king of that country, he low, he never wore no praying about him, he says. Says he, "I want the thing for the stop." But Bert Dan'l, he never studied him. He just prayed right on. Till by and by the king, he lowed that the next man, when he caught praying, he was going to cast him in the lion's den. Well, next morning, soon as Bert Dan'l rose from his bed, he lit right on his knees and went to praying. And while he was a wrestling and praw, the patterollers, they come in, and they tied him hand and foot with a rope and took him right along till they come to the lion's den. And when they was yet a fair ways from there, they hear the lions a-roaring and said, "A-roar! A-roar!" And all the hearts gone to quake, except for Bert Dan'l's. He never noticed them. He just pray along. And by and by, they get up to the den and they tie a long rope round Bert Dan'l's waist and throw him right in, and then they draw up the rope and went back where to come from. Well, early next morning, he had to come again. This time the king, he come with him, and he heard the lions a-roar, and a-roar, a-roar, and they come to the den, and they opened the door, and there was the lions with the mouth open, and the eyes were shining, just a-thumping backwards and forwards. And down in the corner saw the angels moving of his wings. And right in the middle of the den was Dan'l, just a sotten back door. Gentlemen, he wasn't touch. He never so much as had the smell of the lions about him. He was just as whole man as he was the day he was born. Even the boots on him, sir, was as shiny as they was when they put him in there. And he just clumb up the side of the dead, he did, and soon as up his feet touched the earth, he says to the king, says he, "King, it ain't no using for the fool along me," says he. "I'm a praying man myself, and I love to live and die on my knees a-praying and a-solving the Lord." Says he, "The Lord ain't going to let the lions meddle along me," says he. "I ain't feared of nothing," says he. "The Lord is my strength and my rocks, and I ain't afeard of no man." And then he held a preaching right where he was, and he told them of the sins and the goodness of the Lord. He preached the word, he did, right along. And out of that, he'd gone to sing this hymn. Dan'l was a praying man. He prayed 3 times a day. The Lord, he heist the window for to hear poor Dan'l pray. Then he gone to call up the mourners, and they come too. Man, The whole jug was alive with them. The white folks, they went up, and the niggers, they went up, and the paddlers, they went up, and the king, he went up, and they all come through and got religion. And from that time, them folks is a sovereign of the Lord. And now, children, if you be like Badano and say your prayers and put your penance in the Lord, you needn't be afraid of no lions. The Lord, he'll take care of you, and he'd be mighty proud to do it.